Now stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call on 94.7 WPVC-LP Charlottesville. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
It is Sunday morning. What the heck today is it? The 18th?
18th.
It's the 18th. It's February 18th. This is Sean McCord, your person who is not Rick Moore. Your monthly substitute host on the Sunday morning wake-up call, and sitting across from me is my old friend, Garrett Galbraith. I can say that even though we've known each other
five or six years,
yes. but in the world of theater, we've done work together.
Yes, so we have. And I knew who you were, but I was afraid to ask for an autograph.
Well, I got your autograph now. I got my signed copy. A final callback. This is what, your 10th novel?
I think I've rewritten it 10 times.
Yeah, but yeah. It's like, but no, you are. So I know you as an actor, as a writer, as astrologer. We'll get back to that.
Yeah,
and now a novelist.
Mm-hmm.
It's actor, author, astrologist, a novelist. All the A's.
I can think of some others, but it's a G-rated show.
No, this is definitely a G-rated show. So welcome. So the reason I'm having you here today, Gare, is because I had an hour to fill. But in addition
and
to
I'm
that,
chatty.
In addition to that, I have kind of a recurring theme when I had the pleasure of hosting the Wake Up Call. Bringing in people who, as I explained to you before we came on air, bringing in people who have kept art in their lives. There was, I've always had strong artistic impulse, and there was a period in my life when I had no outlet for that. And so my imagined mythical audience is some young person.
Right.
Maybe on the cusp of going out into the world, and they really love theater or film or literature or dance or music or whatever it is, painting, whatever it is that appeals to them. And they're thinking, well, how am I supposed to do that when I have this expectation of to go to college and I have to get a job and I have to, pay my bills and all that. So I love to have people in who have figured out how to do that at varying levels of success. Sometimes it means, like I did, putting those things aside for a few years.
Exactly.
Other times it means you end up, waiting tables.
Exactly.
For a few years. But that's what we want to talk about. So let's talk a little bit about your brand new published novel first, and then we'll kind of go back and peel away the layers.
Very good.
That led up to this moment. So the book is Final Callback, A Comic Murder Mystery by Gare Galbraith. The ISBN number is 99. tell us how this came about.
Well, Sean, you're part of it. I wrote a short play in college called Shortcut about a very frustrated old actor who is wreaking revenge on younger, more gullible people. He's taking his frustration out on them. And then Bar Hoppers and Live Arts came along, and I was walking one day, and I went, I could set that play in a bar, because for people who don't know, Bar Hoppers are plays set in bars that we performed in bars.
Right.
And so I submitted that and renamed it First Drink, Last Call.
And that was in 2013. And the funny thing is, Gare, until you told me just a few minutes ago before we came on air, I didn't realize the connection between that short play that I directed at Bar Hoppers in 2013 and this novel.
Right.
So I'll be expecting my cut.
Oh, you... I've been wanting to cut you for a while.
My cut is apparently a book.
Yes, you get a free book. Even my sister had to pay for one, so there you go.
All right.
So after that production, which you so finely directed, and Ray and Andrew were excellent character actors in that, my friend, Rita Mae Brown, took me aside and said, you are sick, and this needs to be a novel.
Okay, now, we all in the area know who Rita Mae Brown is, but for our international listeners,
yes, sir.
Tell us, who is Rita Mae Brown?
Well, Rita Mae Brown is, before even people were out as gay people, wrote a novel called Ruby Fruit Jungle that dealt with that.
Mm-hmm.
And she is not only a beautiful writer and a pioneer and stuff like that, but she is continually writing. And I will say she is one of the nicest people I've ever met in my life. Just puts you at ease right away. But she is, when people name top 10 influential people for LGBTQ communities, she's right there because she was doing it before people even knew what it was.
Right. And of course, Ruby Food Jungle is probably her first book that landed with a splash. Yes, but she's written many, many other books.
Many others. And she was running her cat, Sneaky Pie, for president.
Sneaky Pie Brown, I remember. Yes.
And I used to do WINA once a month as the call-in astrologer, psychic. And she asked Jane over there, Jane Foy, I need an astrologer. And Jane recommended me. And we've been friends ever since.
How about that?
Yes. She was at my wedding. She was, you know, just, she's a fine one. And so
palling around with celebrities.
Yes. Well, more so than I ever did in Manhattan. All I did was bring them food and drinks or running down on the, you know, trying on jeans besides Robert Duvall and Gap, you know, it was like, oh, this is Manhattan. So it took me a long time to germinate or to ruminate how to make that play into a book. And I'd never written a book. I've written short stories and short plays. And so it took a while.
So let's. So you mentioned Manhattan.
Yes.
Let's do a little bit of the biography. You grew up in Mayberry.
Somewhat. A little bit larger than Mayberry. A little more diverse in its ethnicity.
Where'd you grow up?
Paris, Kentucky. Bourbon County. I'm a graduate of Bourbon County High School.
Really?
Yes.
Okay, I had to know. What is a Bourbon County High School fighting mascot? Is it a bottle of bourbon? It's
Colonels. Yes.
Oh man.
The Colonels. Yes.
I could have predicted that.
Yes.
I was hoping it was a fighting bottle of bourbon.
No. It was Bourbon County used to be huge. It was part of Virginia, and there were three counties of Kentucky, and Bourbon is where it was, you know, invented.
Right.
You know, in tribute to the Bourbon family of France, who seemed to help us in the Revolution.
and then the whole county just moved it to Kentucky.
And then they named Paris after it too.
Right.
No, they carved it out.
Yeah.
You got it.
I keep hearing there was this some kind of conflict.
Yes, a Revolutionary War.
Yeah.
Then Kentucky said, no more of this Virginia stuff.
so you grew up a small child.
Small town.
In Paris, Kentucky.
Yeah.
And when did the did you know all along that you were going to have to be the creative sort?
I don't know if I knew it. I just did it all the time.
Yeah, what'd
you do? I made movies with plots with Super 8mm camera.
Sure, I had a few
of
those.
You know, would gather people and just, you know. Mm-hmm. Then I finally tried to sync sound with it with a cassette recorder. And it was quite a lot of work to stop the movie, start to this, start to that.
Yeah.
I did plays and stuff, but I really didn't. I always wrote. But when I got into performing, it helped me adjust socially, as well as I just had a lot of energy and was in a lot of trouble in junior high and stuff. I was constantly in detention hall because if they were running the school incorrectly, I wasn't shy to tell them.
Yeah, well, I mean, someone had to, right?
Yes. I wrote a letter to the editor when they were going to make the women's gym teacher coach cheerleading. Instead of coaching a girls' basketball team, because they said girls don't like sports.
Ooh.
And I grew up with tomboys. That's how come I can play.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I said, that's wrong. They're wrong. Rather than cheer for the boys, let them play. That was 1970.
1970.
Yes.
Heck of a year.
Yes.
So how did you end up in the little town of Manhattan, New York?
I just knew I would end up in Manhattan or Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
And an acquaintance of mine moved there and had an apartment on the sixth floor of 106th Street in Manhattan, between Columbus and Manhattan.
Oh,
and he would call me every night to beg me to move there. And then another guy was filming a movie that I was a part of and that his father had financed, and he wanted to film the last scene in Times Square, and he said he would fly me up there. And I said, well, why don't you move me there?
So it was a one-way ticket.
It was a one-way ticket, and it really looked like the Beverly Hillbillies truck that we moved up there. It was amazing.
So how old were you then?
24.
24 years old.
Yeah.
And just dropped your... So you literally went From Paris, Kentucky?
No, I was at University of Kentucky in Lexington.
There we go. Okay,
much bigger.
All right, so you had a bit of a bit of the big city life.
Yeah. But I knew I wanted to be in a major hub.
Yeah. So what'd you do when you got there? I mean, you did the film.
Yes.
Shot and there was nothing more glamorous than Times Square.
Well, true. And the character I was playing is a grandmother. It's a country grandmother named Mamaw that I developed at University of Kentucky. I was stage managing a play.
Oh, yeah?
And I looked around. I didn't know what. I said, my thing is to take care of them like they're children so they can play.
Uh-huh.
So no matter what happened, I'll go, oh, don't you worry, Mamaw, I'll take care of that. You know, and then I did a play where I played, and then she emanated. Mm-hmm. She was there. So I had to sing Give My Regards to Broadway in front of the George M. Cohan statue. Dressed as a grandmother. It was 3 days after I moved there. It was great.
Please tell me this is on YouTube somewhere.
He couldn't use the song because couldn't pay the rights.
Oh, of course.
But and I have other scenes in it, but I don't think I've ever seen it.
Really?
Yeah, because it premiered in Lexington. I'd already moved to New York and couldn't afford to go back.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. And for those young people listening, this was in the days when you just couldn't sit down in front of your laptop and watch anything.
Oh, gosh, no. Yeah. You had to go, and it was at the Kentucky Theater. But it was a lot cheaper to live in New York then. It was, you know, we didn't have the laptops, but I paid $125 a month rent.
Right. So remind me, when were you there from?
81 mm-hmm. to 2000.
Right.
Right.
It's a long time.
Yes, it was.
Yeah,
I loved every minute of it.
Yeah, I bet you did. And what were you doing? I mean, 19 years. Condense it down. But what was the track of what you were doing?
Well, to go with the theme of your show, I was doing stand up or trying to do a stand up comedy and auditioning. I first worked at Izod Lacoste as an expediter for my survival job, and then I went.
That's like a clothing store?
Yeah, the alligator on the shirt. Yeah. And then to Bantam Books. Oh, that's right. You worked at Bantam.
That's right. I forgot. We've had this discussion before.
Yes.
We worked at Bantam, but at different times.
Right.
I was there for like 5 months.
Right.
Like in 1980, late 87, 88.
Right. I was there from 82, 83, and 84. And
right.
I ended up being a copywriter for school and college promotional.
Now, were they yet in the 666 building?
In the Antichrist building.
The Antichrist building, which it's one of my favorite, it's my favorite building in Manhattan because I landed in Manhattan as a 26-year-old with no experience whatsoever and got my first job there. And it was 666 and it's upper Manhattan. Well, it's just Midtown. I'm sorry, Midtown.
Yeah.
Down in the Village. We think of it as upper Manhattan, but you're right. It's Midtown. It's a couple blocks from Rockefeller Center,
right.
And the building itself looks like a Japanese robot. Like at any moment it could just like sit up and start walking down
and
Broadway.
Have arms and
right and. Of course, now famously owned by Jared Kushner.
Yes.
Yes.
And at the Rita May was a huge author for us, and I promoted her stuff.
Oh, okay.
And
But you didn't actually know each other.
No. But I did, you know, I said I was there. I said, gosh, there was Stuart Applebaum. She goes, he's still there. This is 30-some years later.
Wow. Wow, the biggest authors whose books I worked on, I was in the trade book section, what are their names now? The married couple who does that, the People's Pharmacy on...
Ozzie and Harriet?
they now do the People's Pharmacy radio show.
I have no idea.
But they had just done a People's Pharmacy book.
Right.
And also, I got to, over the phone, speak with Stephen Hawking's assistant.
There you go.
Because they were just coming out with his book... on the history of time.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So those are my big celebrity.
I remember
calls.
Seeing Kareem Abdul-Jabbar in there one day.
Because, sure.
Yes. The biggest thing I did, I wrote, did a lot of copy for the cover or the inside cover for Jimmy Carter's Keeping Faith.
Oh, very
because
nice.
My boss got very ill and had to, and all of a sudden they said, you have to do this. And it was interesting.
Yeah.
You know, just to, okay. You know, I took a lot of journalism, which journalism and poetry, they say as much as you can in as few words as possible and let them know who, what, when, where, and why.
What? So, and did you, what were your aspirations then?
To be a stand-up comic, actor, director, you know, I love that line, who Mother Teresa, when she won the Nobel Prize, they said, now, Mother Teresa, what's in your future? I think I would like to direct.
Yes. You know. Yes.
So it was all that. It was all that. But it, you know, I don't know. At times I would get in a rhythm of really being doing it nicely, and then at times I couldn't get work at all.
Well, it's hard.
Right.
And so, and that's why I like to have people come on who've had to, you know, had to take a similar journey. It's like, you can be talented, you can be dedicated, you can be willing to do all the hard work, but a lot of it is just luck,
timing,
right,
and fortitude,
but also persistence
and discipline,
yeah,
which sometimes I lacked,
yeah, and but sometimes you just have to, you got to pay the bills,
right. And then I did get attacked and pistol whipped on the upper east side.
Holy.
And it was quite the traumatic thing to get serious on you here, but I went back and didn't know my act. I had to relearn it all, and a lot of that was recovering from that.
Jeez.
Yeah, so that was right when I thought I was hitting a groove and could do a half-hour set, you know, and also being a lot more frank and personal.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that...
Were you able to use that? Were you able to take that trauma?
Well, I just would say, you know, like three guys jumped me and beat me up, and they hadn't even seen my act. You can always find humor, I think, you know, it might take time and, you know, distance. I
mean, yeah.
But, yeah, to some degree, but I think I will use it in the prequel to this.
Ooh.
So I'm threatening that if people do not buy over 1,000 copies of this book, that there will be a prequel.
All right. Well, you heard that. The book that I'm holding in my hand is called Final Callback, A Comic Murder Mystery by my guest, Garrett Galbraith. We are on the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call. This is Sean McCord on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. It is 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. This is Sean McCord. You're listening to The Wake-Up Call with my guest, Garrett Galbraith, who just brought us down. But we're gonna climb
with some truth. You know,
we're gonna climb right back up again.
Yes.
So okay. So you were in Manhattan. You were doing stand up. You were doing a little bit of acting.
Waiting tables, bartending.
Waiting tables, of course. You were working in publishing. You were getting pistol whipped on the Upper East Side. Yikes!
People keep going, but that's a nice neighborhood.
I know it is a nice.
They wanted money for strippers.
Okay. All right. You couldn't have just given it to them?
I might have had it or gone with them.
Yeah, sure. Why not? Yeah, come on, I'll pay for it.
Right.
Yikes. Well, I mean, I was in New York too, not as long as you were, and, you know, I had my experiences as well, but...
I had very few, you know. There was a few times when you thought someone was going to pull a weapon on a subway car.
Or, yeah.
You know, but not a lot. I usually had good instincts.
Yeah. Well, yes, you do. Yes, if you're going to be there for any time at all, you got to develop those instincts. Trust me, if you're in a place like New York, especially, you know, in the 70s and 80s and even into the 90s, you quickly dispense with any idea of being a hero.
Yes.
You learn to spot trouble and figure out
exactly
the fastest way to go the other direction.
And if you heard someone talking loudly to themselves, when I first moved there, I thought, oh, they're an actor going to an audition. And then a few years later, they go, oh, it was someone that has been released from the mental institutions that the government won't support.
Yeah.
And now I'm sure it's people. I can't believe people are aware now just because they're texting and talking on the phone now. I don't see how they would carry on in Manhattan.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how it works. I worked in I worked in Manhattan, and I lived in Brooklyn. And one time my train broke down, and I had to get out in Williamsburg at a time when Williamsburg was not the little hipster paradise that it is now. And I encountered someone who basically apologized to me for holding me up. So at least I had that going for me.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, you see, you would see great kindness on the street, but in a very abrupt way.
Yes. Yes.
You know, where tourists, I would say, and you would go, the guy would go, you do this, and they would have, he goes, oh, come on, I'll take you over there, you know.
Right, right.
But, oh, yeah, you saw it. It was, I loved watching the human, you know, just the entire, and having every background of person all around.
Oh, yeah.
And how it all, if it didn't mesh, then at least we all were side by side. And the only time I ever saw trouble about prejudice or stuff like that was when you would see cars from Jersey or from across the river, one of the bridges or tunnels, because the Manhattanites didn't really carry on like that.
No, 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 no. So what brought you to Charlottesville?
I had reached the end of, I was not auditioning, and I was having landlord problems, and my partner decided to that his business went belly up, and he was going to move to New York, and I said, no, we need to, I'm going to join you in Charlottesville. So that was in the year 2000.
So he was here.
It was for 8 years. We've been together 36.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So had you met up there? He came.
We met in New York, and then he came here in 91.
Because he had a family business here. Right.
And I just said, I'm not doing anything in New York but working and paying, you know, rent.
Yeah.
And that's what our boy here in my book was doing, you know.
Right. Okay. Okay. So let's, that's such a, you opened up the door for me, Gare.
Segway.
So let's go back. So let's go to Final Callback, a comic murder mystery by Gare Galbraith. You'll be able to recognize it in the bookstore because it's blue.
Yes. And it is in Old Dominion.
It's in Old Dominion. Yeah. Very cool. All right. You brought a little piece to read here. So how much have you brought here to read?
In minutes or pages, I can stop any time. You just give me the signal.
Okay.
But I would say that's what in plays, it's usually a minute a page. I would say this is about four.
All right. Yeah. Well, let's jump into it. Just give people, we'll give people a taste.
Exactly. Make the face.
Yeah, you do that, and I'm going to go off, make myself a drink. I'll come back.
Okay. Bring me something.
All right. Here's Gal Galbraith reading from Final Callback.
Well, I would just like to set it up. Like,
please.
Matt has reached the end of his rope. It's in the year 2000. He's not doing anything. And his partner has declared that even if marriage was legal, he would not marry him. And so he decides to give up his rent-controlled apartment to spite the partner.
Also, this is a very specific moment of time.
It is. In November 15th, 2000 is when we didn't know who the president was going to be, whether it was Bush or Gore.
Right.
In a very nebulous, confusing time.
Yes.
And so he has also given up on other stuff, and he's leaving in a huff. And he has been called for his last audition out of the blue, 18 months without nothing.
Mm-hmm.
He goes. He is beaten for the role by a guy named Tack Fightmaster. And Matt takes care of people's pets for a living, and he agrees to take care of Tack's pets. Okay?
Okay.
That's where
here's the setup.
Wednesday, November 15th, 2000. 2:59 p.m. Manhattan. He remembered what he had forgotten twice. The refreshing pause. Matt knew there were other modes to prevent escape, but refreshing pause treats were decidedly the most effective. I'll block the way with the Dwayne Reed bags, he thought smugly and chuckled ruefully, muttering, after a day like today, I'm surprised I can manage smugness. Turning the key in a lock that is not your own can be unnerving. For Matt, it was second nature. He'd done it thousands of times and knew it was absolutely vital to open this door in total silence. Walsh's speed thrusts to freedom were rarely thwarted without a tossing of refreshing paws. While his partner Duffy was a docile soul, Matt was a relentless kitty adventurer. Grasping three merchandise-filled bags, Matt managed to slip in undetected. He could be quite sneaky. It was easier today as the phone was ringing. He yelled, "Hey there, kitty cats, I'm here." Matt always spoke to his charges, seemed to help them and him. He just loved these two cats, his faves, fun little rascals. They played like kittens, not full-grown legal-aged felines. That occasion when Matt arrived and Walsh was mewling inside the bathroom's wicker hamper, with Duffy sitting on the lid, hampering him, so to speak, Matt gave Matt smiles weeks after that. Seemed to be quite the fun place for them, that hamper. Matt was never surprised to find it turned over with one of the cats lounging in the soiled clothes on the tile floor. Why a sturdy guy as Tack had such a shaky, dirty clothes container was beyond him. The phone clamor ceased before the answering machine picked up. Using his other pet signal, Matt rapidly clicked his tongue to the roof of his mouth. Where was Walsh? He was usually right there, readying a crafty exit strategy. Hearing a slight, sad meow, Matt glanced to see him on the third shelf of Tack's dusty bookcase. Hey, guy, said Matt, doing a gentle finger glide under Walsh's chin. That's just like you. When you're not running for the door, you like to be up high, don't you, sweet fellow? He slipped his payment off the TV. A lot of bills, like Tack said. Thank God, now I won't have to go to the bank. The TV was on, which was rare for Matt to see. Low volume, ESPN. Could Tack be more of a straight boy stereotype? He turned to the kitchen to see Duffy eagerly lapping something from the floor. Crap, a mess to clean up. Who am I, Hazel? He fumed, counting his money as he headed toward the mess. Not in the job description. That Tack better leave a bigger tip to cover this. As he hit the tiles of the kitchen, he skidded into a pratfall, sliding right onto his skinny ass. He rolled over to find his face in a blue denimed crotch. What the hell, Tack? At first he thought Tack was playing a joke, but no punchline here. Matt red-handedly pushed the bulge away. Shaking and then standing, he grasped the kitchen counter to steady his footing in the slippery mess. He plucked the 9 damply red $10 bills from the floor. There Tack lay, as still as a passed-out frat boy as his first homecoming party, only with crimson streams oozing from his stomach and neck.
All right. So, how cruel of me to stop you there.
That's all right. It's your job.
And how can you not go back and pick up Final Callback, a comic murder mystery, which you can get here at the New Dominion Bookstore.
Just one copy, though.
There's just one.
You can order it on Amazon.com.
Oh.
Final Callback.
Well, no. But they should go to New Dominion first.
Or they can order it from me at gadare@aol.com.
Okay.
I'm selling them from the trunk of my car.
And you just put your email out in the air.
Yes, I did. I don't care.
That address again?
gadare@aol.com.
Gaydar.
People say that, but it's my first name with the first two letters of my middle name in the middle, you smarty pants. He looks so smug right here. And if I may say, this might sound serious, the first chapter, but it gets funny.
It gets funny.
Yes.
Yeah. Once he
stumbles to the street with all the money that he has, and he goes to Dwayne Reed in a hysteria because he can get the refreshing pause. And he is a preferred customer.
There we go.
There you go. And then his friends join together to help him not go to prison.
So we both used to work in publishing.
Yes, sir.
Ironically, for the same company many years ago. Tell me about publishing this book.
Well, there was a small blurb in The Progress about this gentleman named Wayne Drumheller. Who was hosting this thing in Lovingston. And he'd guide you to self-publish and does it in a very, how can I say this, supportive and non-exploitative way. Is it exploitive or exploitative?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. And that's how it's in my hot little hands right now.
Yeah.
Because to wait for now this, I hope I can get in front of a real publisher, you know, that can take it to another level as far as selling it. And it's another job right now. It's like being talented and, you know, as Lont Fontaine used to say, the team, it's not only enough to be talented, you must have a talent for having talent.
Yes, yes. But, yeah. I mean, what a great turnaround, because I mentioned that we... we both worked in publishing on purpose because, you know, back in the day, the only way you could get a book published was to submit it to every publisher I can think of. You know, if you had an agent, if you had connections in the book industry. And I don't know about you, man, but when, but just in the few months I was at Bantam, I saw some really terrible books go through. I had to do part of my job was the final proof. And to go through and, you know, so I had to read these things.
Yes.
Some of them were just awful, but they were, I mean, they were getting published.
But they had names.
They, of some sort, or they were, or they were a trend.
Right.
Or they had something, some kind of hook going for them.
Celebrity biography or
other. Yeah. So now, you know, now it's true that anybody can publish in as much as, you know, you pay enough money, You can get a book bound like this, but we still have to get it out in front of people. So, on the one hand, what a great thing that there is room for independent artists.
Yes,
I mentioned to you before we came on the air. I'm gonna make a serious sidebar here. So, hang on to your hat. Last night I was at the Paramount to see a musical group called Postmodern Jukebox.
Mm-hmm.
This is an amazing band, and by the way, Paramount was full.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have a contract. They're not under a label. They don't have a publisher. It was this guy who had this great idea, and he put together this band just like 2 or 3 years ago in L.A., and they're a big band in the old sort of Benny Goodman style.
Love it.
They've got a pianist and a drummer and a string player who plays multiple stringed instruments and a brass section, which was just saxophone and a trombone. So there's really, really solid band.
Violins?
The string player played like a upright electric bass.
Yes.
Which is fascinating to watch. And also electric guitar. And then they had like four different singers and an MC. So it was about the music. So the band comes out and plays first, and then the MC comes out and they bring out one singer, and she's beautiful and she's wearing this amazing dress, and she's like 25 years old, and she'd been on American Idol, and she knocked our socks off, and then she left. And then he introduced the next singer, and she comes out, and she's just as amazing, just as powerful, and she's beautiful with this beautiful dress, and she's, and you know, it's about singing and the personality that comes through, and then she leaves, and then a dancer comes out, this again, a beautiful woman. It's just this combination of ballet and tap, and then two more singers, and then this guy comes out. And the band just, and different band members might leave. So, okay, we don't need the horn section now. So they'd leave and then they'd come back. And it was just one thing after another, just 90 minutes of amazing, upbeat music bringing us to our feet. And then, you know, 20 minutes of encore.
Yes.
And we walk out of there exhausted. And the amazing thing about this group is they're self-funded. They do... Okay. You go watch their videos on YouTube, look up Postmodern Jukebox. They make money by touring. Because of this concept that they have, they can have different singers come in.
Exactly. And maybe local people where they are.
In some areas. And they actually, they're now big enough name that they audition singers to come in.
Yes.
And they have people who, like I said, have been on American Idol or have been on Broadway, and I just want to come out and belt out these songs.
Exactly.
It's highly entertaining, and it's great.
So are these from the Great American Songbook or from?
They are big band versions of contemporary songs.
Okay.
So they did Bruce Springsteen, Taylor Swift, Beyonce. I mean, songs that you've heard of.
That the young people like,
but with this nice 1940s big band swing renditions. And they were fantastic.
I have a big question for you.
Yeah,
what's that? Why didn't you ask me to go? What are you?
Yeah.
We were bartending for Top Girls at Live Arts last night, which is excellent.
By the way, yes, everyone goes see Top Girls at Live Arts. So my point being is that, now, I mean, we live in an era where a band like this can thrive without a label.
Yes.
They're completely self-funded. The musicians were out in the lobby of the Paramount afterwards selling swag.
Yes.
You can look up Postmodern Jukebox. They said, they said, take out your phones, take pictures, take videos. It's fine. We want you to just use the hashtag PMJ. And at the end of the show, they promised to come back, which brought the house down. Because we want you to come back. You are awesome. So artists, musicians can now self-fund themselves. Authors like you can self-publish Final Callback, A Comic Murder Mystery, by my guest, Gary Galbraith. So an amazing age that we live in, but we still need to figure out how to get these objects of our creativity out in front of an audience.
Yes, and not cut out the middleman, but maybe attract those who can take us to another level.
Exactly. Yes. So you wouldn't turn down a publisher picking up your book and distributing it to bookstores.
It would depend on their manner.
Yes.
And their decorum.
Yes.
And how much money they want. Yeah, no. We got to do it.
So how's it been going, by the way? This came out...
December. And it's done well. I mean, on Amazon. I keep plugging it in different ways. And the amazing thing is, you know, you go and you get advice. There are so many avenues of how to do this that it's hard to pen. And every day I look at one thing, I go, I'm going to initiate this to try to sell some books, because it's everything from contacting independent publishers to getting it in the library, getting it into other venues.
Right.
Or even getting yourself on this radio.
On the radio. Yes. With our, I promise you, dozens of listeners.
Yes. Can I say hello to them by name? Hello, Lisa.
By the way, is this in the library?
Not yet.
Not yet. Okay. We'll talk.
Yes, we'll talk.
Yeah.
Selling from the trunk of my car under the dead of night. You can contact me.
Okay.
And plus, I'm listed in the phone book until I get a stalker.
Wait a minute.
Yes, I have a landline.
What is this phone book of which you speak?
This phone book? Well, there are these heavy things that you use to prop up bookshelves.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Especially in Manhattan.
and tear in half if you wanted to impress somebody. All right. This is the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call. My guest, Gary Galbraith. We've been talking about his book, Final Callback, A Comic Murder Mystery. We will come back and talk about a bit more about Rita Mae Brown and Sneaky Pie Brown and the writing you did for her. And then we'll segue into astrology. This is Sean McCord. You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. It is Sunday morning on the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call with Sean McCord and my guest, Gary Galbraith, who apparently 20 seconds wasn't quite enough time for him to say what he wanted to say off the air. Sorry, man.
No. We're fine.
You're back on the air now. So you came to Charlottesville in 2000,
mm-hmm.
And you mentioned you did the play for Bar Hoppers that I directed. That's and Rita Mae Brown came to see. But how did you actually, because you didn't know her. When you were at Bantam Books.
No.
How did you two meet up? Well, you told me. That's right.
I was on WINA once a month, and Jane Foy referred us to each other.
Right. As an astrologer.
Yes. And I would do on WINA, phone-in, three-minute readings.
This is not WINA. This is WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.
This is back when, you know, they made me get up a lot earlier, Sean, so I like you. But what happened, when I was injured, I could not wait tables in Manhattan, and I saw an ad in the Village Voice about being a phone astrologer psychic, and it was one of those that you used to see advertised all the time in the 90s.
Uh-huh.
And you sit in your underwear, if you care to, at home, log on, and then you get calls from all over the country. People get 3 minutes free, and so you have to throw out stuff they can validate, you know, or they'll hang up and not pay $3.99 a minute.
Sure.
I had a broken shoulder and couldn't wait tables.
So what are the qualifications for being a phone
psychic?
They
didn't ask any, but I had those.
Well, okay.
Yes.
All
because
right.
What I would do is look up the you know, there's their information as sun sign, moon sign. You know, we're not just, you're not just a Gemini. You are a Gemini with your moon in Pisces, and I am a Pisces with moon in Gemini, which means we have rapport. And I would toss out stuff usually about their personality. I had two guys one night go, well, heck, fire, we called to make fun of you, but now I can listen all night, you know?
All right. Okay, so just, I'm that guy.
So, yes, yeah, so that's where how I got started at WINA is that they brought me in one time, and I did 11 years.
Huh. And so, but somewhere, and so then Rita
May wanted.
Because that's how I first sort of became aware of the work you were doing when you were actually writing a regular column for her website.
I was writing a column for Sneaky Pie to run Sneaky Pie for president, and I got to combine, political humor is my favorite.
Yeah.
You know, everything from Jon Stewart to Steve Colbert,
yeah.
Art Buckwald, if you remember that.
Oh, I remember
Art Buckwald. Right, and now. Mort Saul.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was able to combine politics, humor, and astrology in one column. And it probably reached dozens of people, too.
Well, I was among them.
Yes.
And can we still find those anywhere?
From the back of my car.
There we go.
No, I do have copies, but no, the website is no longer... You know, when it went out of business, I thought we can access the past stuff, but no.
Yeah.
But I still have all the columns in my.
Yes. So isn't ironic that the internet was supposed to be where the repository of everything, and yet we're learning how ephemeral it can be.
Yes. Even when I posted on Facebook did not remain. You know what I mean? Like I would post the column on Facebook, and you can no longer
because you were posting a link to where it was.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so now I promised you this, and I'm a little trepidatious here, but let's talk a little bit about
trepidatious.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about this astrology gig of yours, because I'm a born skeptic.
Good for you. I like the skeptics.
Okay, why do you like a skeptic so much?
Oh, because it's fun to convince them. It's just like, you know, people that do not like Liza Minnelli, and I would take them to see her, and they would come out and go, oh, my God.
Okay, now, hold on there, because Liza, you know, you can objectively measure Liza Minnelli's talent.
Yeah.
And if you only know her from...
Different live.
Pardon me?
Way better live.
Right, exactly, of course, yeah.
So, but take people to see the live show, and they would just go, oh, I hated her, no, I love her.
Yeah,
it's good to commit, just like the 3 minutes on the phone line where I worked, people had to be skeptical when they dialed it, because they were going to be paying $3.99 a minute after the first.
Well, yeah, but you got, I mean, unless you're terribly bored, though, I mean, why would they call in the first place?
It's amazing, everything from miserable... people to people who were having a party, to people who wanted to know when their evil mother-in-law was going to die, so they could get in there. Oh, it was the panoply? Is that
the panoply,
yes. I'm better read than spoken. And
I'm on the radio.
Especially, I would do it 11 at night to 3 in the morning. And it was because when they ran the commercials. So I started studying this when I read a book called Sun Sign, Moon Sign, because y'all would read things about Pisces, and we'd go, yeah, well, that's right. But when I read the combination with the moon and Gemini, it was like, you think all the time, you talk all the time, you know, you do this, you do that. And I went, how the heck do they know this? And working at Bantam Books, you could order any book you wanted.
That's right.
And so I started ordering a library of astrology books, and then I learned how to do charts, and I also studied psychic visualization, which is meditation. And
okay,
you should see his face.
So the reason I'm skeptical,
yes, sir,
is because the placement of stars in the skies and the orbits of planets is totally mechanical,
right?
And coincidental,
right?
I mean, you know, if you see an astrological sign, a constellation, excuse me, up in the sky now, those stars only happen to form a pattern because of where we are in the galaxy.
Exactly.
And the V that, you know, creates Taurus the bull, those particular stars are literally, you know, thousands, if not tens of thousands of light years apart. Okay. I know I'm not telling you anything you don't know. You know, and if you're not in our solar system, if you're in a different solar system, the stars line up completely differently.
It would be interesting to see the chart of someone there, but I wanted it. I tried to prove it wrong. I tried to say, I said, no, 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 no. And the more I studied, the more I went, this is interesting. Like, people that you hit it off with right away usually have something in common in your charts where there's a...
And what they have in common is the time of year they were born?
The time, date, and place. But what moves the oceans? The moon.
Well, yeah,
the gravitational force of the moon.
Yes.
And every culture, just about, has its own version of astrology.
Yes.
To believe, dismiss, or to study.
Yes.
And I not only believe it, but I have seen it work. And I have clients who come back. I have people who've hired me for parties and people who've hired for very serious consultations.
Oh, I don't doubt
right.
any of that,
right.
that people believe.
Yes. I'm not trying to convince you.
What I had trouble with is the idea that the accidental placement of objects in the sky isn't anything to do with someone's personality.
True. And I see your point, but I can't. It was proven in court, in a New York Manhattan court in the 1919 or whatever.
What was proven?
That this is valid.
Okay.
Look it up.
Well, come on now. We don't have time to Google.
No, my bad. But I'm just, I mean, because it is, there's a word I want here. It is not an exact science. It is more of an art. And it is a great study of personalities, and I've used it in acting. You know, I played John II in Lion and Winter. I looked up. I said, he's a Capricorn. It's all about daddy. Daddy's attention. Daddy's approval. You know?
So.
And about health. Stuff where you're more vulnerable in your health. And what I would love to do with you or anyone else is have people give me three birth dates, times, and places blind. And I would pick one and read for that person and see if it matched. And we can't do that now.
No, because I don't have, I didn't come in with birthdays
right.
Prepared.
Right. And you would have. And I would say, I've done a slight reading for Sean, which he was very polite about, but I'd like to tell it to his wife, because I've seen this too, read for three or four people, and they go, no, I'm not like that. And the other three go, yeah, you are.
Okay, all right. No, I'm skeptical.
I appreciate it.
But you are my guest.
Yes, sir.
And I'm also
you're a gentleman.
And I'm also interested. So if you want to read me.
No, I mean, I don't have anything. This is general stuff that I printed up just in case.
Oh, okay.
You know, but... I've learned a lot from it, and I've used it in romance and friends. And you can also use it to tell what people's buttons are and how to get along with them and what to do and not to do. Shall I say the water signs, Pisces, Scorpio, and Cancer? You watch your tone of voice. And with Libra, you better have manners. And with Sagittarius, tell the truth or be gone, because you're going to hear it from them.
So I work in theater, too.
Yes, sir.
And something that I find a very useful tool of late is personality tests.
Yes.
Because, you know, if you're going to be working with people in a collaborative environment, it helps to know, this person doesn't like confrontation.
Exactly.
This person is, you know, and I know there are certain scales. This person is... You know, projects as an extrovert, but they're actually an introvert.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this person doesn't take criticism well the first time, doesn't like to be told what to do. And so, you know, there are...
Or likes it person to person rather than in front of a group.
Exactly. You know? So, and it's very, very useful if you're going to be working with people. Now, I haven't yet actually, I would love to, but I haven't yet actually, you know, like just sat down and, you know, with a group of people, you know, as a director, or as a producer, or a writer, or whatever, and say, okay, everyone go out and take these personality tests and come back. And because ironically, you know, just simply taking a personality test, they're going to be people who don't want to share because it reveals things about them that they don't want to have revealed.
Even though being in a play, you
Right.
Strip back the
right. Right. So I'm down with that.
Yes, sir.
I'm down with figuring out.
Carl Jung used this.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
I mean, not personality test, astrology.
Archetypal
astrology. Carl Jung.
Carl Jung used archetypes. Okay, so let's talk about. I'm not convinced that the placement of stars and planets actually has anything to do with their personalities.
Yes, sir.
But I will concede that it is very useful to measure people's personalities, especially if you're going to be working together.
Yes.
So tell me more about these archetypes.
Well, Aries is the first sign, is the baby of the zodiac.
Why is that?
Very
impulsive. Is it alphabetical?
Yeah, no. Aries, what day is spring? March 20th, March 21st. That's when Aries starts.
Oh, okay.
And it is the first sign. They're impulsive. It also represents the first step in evolution of man, finding fire. Aries is a fire sign. Taurus is earth, dependable, reliable. Their key phrase is, I have, and they are very patient until they say, I've had it. And then you got to watch out because they are the bull in the china shop. Gemini, and I'm looking at one right now, is...
See, I've always related more to Orion. I've always felt like that's my constellation.
Then you take that. Do you mean the movie studio?
No, I mean the actual constellation.
I know what you mean.
My grandfather always told me it was the only Irish constellation.
Sean McCord, he's telling us.
Yeah.
Yes. Gemini is, I think, you think all the time. You love communication. Your mind works constantly. And sometimes it's difficult for you to sleep. Also, you need to watch out for your arms, hands, and lungs in health situations. I don't know if I'll have time to go through all 12 signs here. Pick one.
What comes next? I have no idea. By the way.
Cancer.
By the way.
And nations have a chart.
By the way.
This nation has a chart, and you should see Donald Trump's chart with this.
I will say,
yes, sir.
I definitely found points of connection,
yes,
with what you just said about Gemini.
Very good.
So I will give you that.
You love, yes, and puzzles and figuring things out, you know, that's a Gemini's, I think. You think all the time. But your moon is in Pisces, which makes you a lot more sensitive, Gemini. It does.
What does that mean, moon in Pisces?
Well,
I literally don't know what that means.
When you were born, the sun was in Gemini. Every other planet, as you have mentioned, had to be in a certain place as well. And when you were born, the moon was in Pisces. Steven, this is where people fade. This is where we go from 101 and people going, oh, it's not, doesn't match me in the comics or whatever the daily thing is.
This
is personality. Your moon is what you need every day. It's what your childhood was like. And it is your daily moods. Where your Mercury is how you communicate. How your Venus is how you love and how you express yourself artistically. Mars is your anger points and your life energy.
What about Uranus? Where does that go?
I'd like to know where you could tap in. You could put where you could put your damn lips on. If I can talk like my people.
I'm sorry. I had to go for the obvious.
You
joke.
Had to go for, you know, he's using a joke that's 10 times as old as he is.
Yes.
Yes, but then it's Uranus. Uranus, you're a man of education. Learn the planets. We don't say Venus, do we? So,
all right, let's pick.
Cancer is the next one. It is a water sign, and this nation is a Cancer. It was born on July 4th, 1776. And if you look at the chart of that, and supposedly the founding fathers postponed 2 days in doing this because they wanted a better chart. Because
you're telling us our founding fathers are reading.
You think about it. We were the first country to pick. To decide we were a country on a certain date.
Mm-hmm.
And that is part of the legend that they said we cannot have it during a full moon in Capricorn. We must postpone it and have a moon in Aquarius.
So now you can read the astrological sign of a nation.
Yes. Of a business, of a relationship. When you and I met, that's the chart of our relationship. And this is another thing I use this for is compatibility with couples.
So how do you reconcile this with free will?
The astrology is a map. It is not written in stone. It is, how can I say this? It doesn't compel, it impels. How do you like that?
Okay.
That it is a map of how you can go through life, but it is not total fate. We all have choices. But sometimes the chart can influence the choices made or presented to them in certain points of their life. I knew Uranus, our favorite planet, is a planet of sudden change and brilliance and originality, but sudden change. And my partner's birthday and my rising sign are in the same degree of Aquarius. And I looked at him in 99 and I said, everything's going to change in 2000. Everything. And he's a skeptic, too. And he just goes, how do you know these things?
What about wedding anniversaries?
Wedding anniversaries are pretty good. At least I could help you mm-hmm. when you call for a consultation to decide how to do it, whether you need to get away or to publicly. And I think a lot would depend on your mood. And I think you're also one of these, like me, who's an extroverted introvert. And there's times you want to be out and about. But I would say he's quite the romantic.
You know what? I'm actually sorry that we didn't start this earlier because I would have liked to have had more time to discuss this.
Very good.
But we only have a minute left.
Very
so
good.
I want to, but let's
plug.
Let's do this again. my guest and pal, Gary Galbraith, with his book, Final Callback, A Comic Murder Mystery, which you can find on Amazon, which you can find in New Dominion Bookstore, and which apparently you can find out of the trunk of his car.
At GADARE@AOL.com, or I am listed in the phone book.
Okay.
Nobody calls me anymore.
Well, you heard that. Look up Garrett in the phone book.
Galbraith, yes.
Thank you so much for coming in.
Sean, it's been a pleasure.
It's been great fun. It's always fun talking to you. And I look forward to carrying on this conversation some other time.
Very good.
This is Sean McCord, the host of the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. This is 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The Wake Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Production assistance and engineering from Sean McCord and Mike Friend. Be sure to join Rick next Sunday morning at 11 a.m. for the Wake Up Call, only on WPVC LP Charlottesville.